Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we have really an incredible story, one of the most remarkable turnarounds in modern medicine, I think. We're diving into Breath from Salt, Conquering Cystic Fibrosis by Bijal P. Trivedi. Okay, let's just set the scene. Cystic fibrosis, or CF, for decades, this was basically a death sentence. Kids often didn't make it past childhood, maybe age 10 if they were lucky. It was seen as this intractable genetic curse, no real answers, but today. Well, today things look vastly different. Many patients are living full lives, well into their 50s, even beyond. It's become for most a manageable chronic condition. So the big question, the one driving this whole deep dive, is how? How on earth did that happen? How did we go from this fatal diagnosis to something people can actually live with?
Yeah, and it's such a critical story to unpack because it's not just about medicine. It's really a blueprint. The CF turnaround happened at this unique intersection. You had the deep science, sure, the molecular biology, but you also had incredibly powerful patient advocacy. And then there's this third element, something the book really highlights, venture philanthropy.
Venture philanthropy, okay.
Exactly. And for you, the listener, this whole story offers this potential roadmap, you know, a way to think about tackling any really complex, tough problem, not just genetic disease. It kind of shatters the idea that genetic diseases are just fixed fates. We're going to see how a community, thinking strategically and taking, frankly, massive financial risks, completely changed the game for an inherited illness.
And the guide for this journey is Bijal P. Trivedi. She's a very accomplished science journalist, written for places like National Geographic, Scientific American, you know, top tier.
Right. And what makes her perspective so valuable here is that blend of skills. She has a master's in science journalism. So she gets the science. You can explain the complex stuff, the faulty proteins, the drug mechanisms, potentiators, correctors, all that. She understands why it matters at a molecular level.
But she's also a journalist.
Yes. And that meant she put in the years to get incredible access. She talked to everyone, the scientists in the labs, the pharma execs making these huge bets, billions of dollars on the line.
And the families.
Crucially, the patients and families living it. Mm. She connects the dots between, say, some specific DNA sequence and the visceral reality of a child gasping for air. She makes the science human.
So the book's core argument, Breath from Salt,
yeah.
What's the central idea?
The central thesis is pretty profound, is that the CF story isn't just a success, it's a paradigm shift. It basically throws down the gauntlet to the idea that rare, complicated diseases aren't worth the massive investment needed to tackle them.
So it chronicles this massive shift, right, from just managing symptoms. I remember reading about the chest physiotherapy, the antibiotics, just trying to cope.
Exactly, palliative care. Trying to manage the awful symptoms, the lung infections, the digestive issues.
To actually correcting the problem at its genetic source. Fixing the root cause.
That's the leap. From just clearing out the sticky mucus daily, hoping to buy time, to fixing the underlying biological machinery that causes the mucus problem in the first place.
Wow.
And this incredible acceleration, the speed at which this happened, was really fueled by that model we mentioned. Venture philanthropy, pioneered by the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, the CFF.
Okay, CFF.
Got it. This is central to the book's insight. Normally, nonprofits might give out grants for basic research, kind of scattershot. The CFF, they did something radically different. They decided to use their donor money, like venture capital, high risk, high reward, investing directly in biotech companies to push drug development forward fast. That financial innovation, that strategic bet, is arguably why the effective treatments arrived when they did.
Okay, let's dig into that journey. The book starts with some pretty dramatic history, right? That old folklore about salty babies.
Yeah, it's haunting. Northern European folklore,
yes.
Centuries old, about babies who tasted salty when kissed. They were sometimes called witch children, believed to be cursed, doomed to die young.
And that saltiness, that was a real clue.
One of the very first clinical clues, yes.
Mm.
The formal medical identification, though, came much later, in the 1930s. Dr. Dorothy Anderson, a pathologist, she did these incredibly detailed autopsies, noticed the distinct pattern of damage, the scarring in the pancreas, the lung fibrosis, and she's the one who gave the disease its name, cystic fibrosis. But for decades after that, it was still a diagnosis essentially without hope.
Then came the big scientific breakthrough moment, 1989. There was this intense international race to find the actual gene responsible.
A huge race. And eventually, scientific heavyweights like Francis Collins and Lap Chin Tsui, they nailed it.
They found the CFTR gene.
The cystic fibrosis transmembrane conductance regulator gene, CFTR. Sounds complex, but its job is basically simple. It provides instructions for making a protein that acts like a tiny gate or channel for chloride ions on the surface of cells.
A chloride channel. Okay.
And when that gene is faulty, the protein gate doesn't work right. Salt and water can't move across the cell membrane properly. And the result? That thick, sticky, life-threatening mucus builds up everywhere. Lungs, pancreas, digestive system.
But here's the fascinating twist the book highlights. Finding the gene wasn't the finish line. Not even close.
Not at all. It was just the beginning. Trivedi uses a great analogy. It was like finding the precise address of a faulty switch in a house.
You know where the problem is.
Right, you pinpointed it, but you don't have the tools or the key to actually flip the switch or fix it.
And this created that infamous gap, right? The valley of death between discovering something in basic science and actually getting a drug or therapy out of it.
Precisely. And pharmaceutical companies, they weren't exactly rushing to bridge that valley for CF. Well, it's a rare disease, relatively speaking. The potential market size just didn't seem big enough to justify the enormous cost and risk, often billions of dollars, of developing a new drug from scratch. The standard market incentives just weren't there.
Okay, so the science is stuck, pharma isn't jumping in. This is where the CFF makes its move.
This is the pivotal moment. Enter Dr. Robert Beale, the leader of the CFF at the time. He looked at the situation and realized waiting for traditional drug development wasn't going to cut it. Patients were dying.
So he changed the CFF's whole approach.
Completely. He shifted them from being just, you know, passive grant givers to becoming this aggressive, proactive force, a venture philanthropy engine. They basically decided, we're not waiting for a cure anymore. We're going to go out and commission one. We'll buy it.
Wow. How did they do that?
They took donor money, hundreds of millions of dollars raised from families, bake sales, walkathons, you name it, and invested it strategically directly into biotech companies. The most famous partnership was with Vertex Pharmaceuticals. And these weren't just donations. These were structured deals. The CFF took on significant financial risk, funding the crucial, early, riskiest stages of research and development that pharma often shies away from for rare diseases.
Hang on. Donor money? Hundreds of millions. Investing it like venture capital in high-risk biotech. I mean, that sounds incredibly dangerous for a nonprofit. What if it had all gone wrong?
Oh, absolutely. It was a massive gamble. Trivedi definitely covers the criticism, the anxiety around this. It was hugely controversial.
I bet.
But Beale and the CFF board, they looked at the alternative, which was watching another generation of kids suffer and die while waiting potentially decades for a breakthrough, and decided that was the bigger risk.
That inaction was the real gamble.
Exactly. Their calculation was.
Yeah.
We have to de-risk this research. We have to make it attractive enough for a company like Vertex, with its scale and expertise, to take it over the finish line through clinical trials and manufacturing. It was bold, it was aggressive, and, well, it paid off spectacularly.
So this partnership, this gamble, led directly to the drugs.
Directly to the scientific climax. The development of the CFTR modulator drugs. These are the game changers.
Modulators. Okay, break that down for us. How do they work? We know the protein is faulty.
Right. So the CFTR protein, because of the gene mutation, either gets misfolded and stuck inside the cell, never reaching the surface where it needs to be, or it makes it to the surface but doesn't open properly. It's broken in different ways depending on the specific mutation.
Got it.
So the first type of drug they developed were correctors. Think of the protein like a crumpled key. A corrector helps it fold into the right shape so it can actually get to the cell surface, to the lock it needs to open.
Okay. Correctors help the protein get to the right place.
Exactly. Then the second type were potentiators. Once the protein, the key, is in place at the cell surface, the lock, the potentiator acts like WD-40. It helps the channel gate swing open wide and stay open longer, letting those crucial chloride ions flow through efficiently.
So corrector gets it there, potentiator makes it work better.
You got it. And the real breakthrough, the home run, was combining these strategies, developing drugs that had both correctors and potentiators working together.
And that led to Trikafta?
That led to the triple combination therapy, Trikafta, which combines multiple correctors with a potentiator. It's like using the perfectly shaped key and the lubricant together.
And the results?
Just stunning, truly life-altering. Trivedi shares stories of patients who, after starting the drug, could suddenly take deep breaths for the first time in their lives. People noticing their sweat wasn't salting anymore. This therapy works remarkably well for over 90% of the CF population. It didn't just manage symptoms, it addressed the fundamental defect. It turned a relentlessly progressive, fatal disease into a manageable chronic condition, often controlled by just taking pills each day.
fail to chronic. That's almost hard to comprehend. Monumental shift. Okay, so let's pull back a bit. What are the big themes, the core messages here that resonate beyond just CF?
Right, so theme one, the power of molecular understanding. This CF story is like the poster child for personalized medicine. Once scientists really understood the precise problem at the molecular level, how that specific CFTR protein was misfolding or malfunctioning, because of that specific mutation, they could design drugs to fix that specific problem.
Like a targeted strike.
Exactly. Knowing the root cause with that level of detail allows for these incredibly precise and therefore effective solutions.
Okay, theme one, understand the molecule. What's next?
Theme two, venture philanthropy as a revolutionary model. This is the CFF's huge legacy beyond just CF drugs. Their approach is now seen as a blueprint for other rare disease groups.
How so?
They showed how patient advocacy groups can transform themselves, go from being, you know, relatively passive fundraisers holding bake sales to becoming sophisticated, active drivers of research.
Acting more like investors.
Precisely. They didn't just hope for research. They strategically bought access to it, demanded results, and really forced the pace of innovation in a way that traditional funding models often don't.
Okay, powerful stuff. And the third theme.
Theme three, the unresolved ethics of success. And this is crucial. Trivedi is clear-eyed about this. The triumph comes with a massive ethical question mark.
The cost.
The cost. Trikafta, this miracle drug, hit the market with an absolutely staggering price tag, often over $300,000 per patient per year.
Wow, $300,000 a year.
Yeah. And that creates this immediate unavoidable tension. You have this drug developed partly because nonprofit donor money, money from patients' families,
yep,
subsidized the early massive risk for a for-profit company, Vertex.
Right. The CFF de-risked it for them.
They did. So the question becomes, if patient-raised money was catalytic in creating the cure, what's the responsibility of the company and maybe society as a whole to make sure that cure is actually accessible and affordable to all the patients who need it?
It's a huge moral dilemma, healing versus profit.
The book really dives into that tension. And it also makes a point not to forget the roughly 10% of CF patients whose specific mutations mean these modulator drugs don't work for them. The fight isn't completely over.
Absolutely. Okay, let's talk about some memorable ideas or quotes from the book. Sometimes a specific phrase really captures the essence.
Definitely. One that sticks out, going back to the early days, captures the importance of just paying attention. The salt in their sweat, the breath they struggle for these became clues to unlocking one of medicine's greatest puzzles. It really emphasizes how basic clinical observation laid the groundwork.
Yeah, that link between the lived experience and the scientific quest. Another idea that seems central is the definition of the shift itself. For the first time in CF history, we weren't just treating symptoms, we were correcting the fundamental defect that causes the disease.
That sums up the whole revolution, doesn't it? From coping to correcting.
It really does.
And one more, reflecting that patient power dynamic. The CF community didn't just want better treatments, they demanded them, funded them, and helped design them. That really highlights the agency of the patients and families. They weren't passive bystanders.
They were active partners, even investors in their own future. Okay, so let's bring this home. What are the practical applications? What can you, listening now, take away from this?
Well, if you're involved in any kind of nonprofit work or patient advocacy, especially for rare diseases, the CFF model is incredibly instructive.
How so?
Instead of just sprinkling small grants around, think about concentrating your resources. Acting more like a strategic investor, funding specific milestones, maybe even negotiating for some intellectual property rights or a share of future profits to reinvest in more research. Be bold.
Take calculated risks to drive progress.
Exactly. And for people in policy or business, the CFF Vertex story is this fascinating, though complicated, case study. It shows how catalytic capital from nonprofits can bridge that valley of death in drug development, especially for diseases the market might otherwise ignore. It's a lesson in strategic partnerships and managing risk.
But it also forces that really tough conversation we mentioned, right? For policymakers, especially.
Absolutely. When patient groups literally help fund the development of a multi-billion dollar drug, how do we ensure fair pricing? How do we prevent the very people who helped create the cure from being unable to afford it?
Yeah.
That's an urgent policy debate that needs to happen.
Definitely. Okay, final thoughts. What's one surprising thing or a key takeaway for you from this deep dive?
For me, it's that core idea. Genetic diseases aren't necessarily destiny. They are incredibly complex puzzles, yes, but they can be solved. The CF story proves that with persistence, with smart strategic funding, And sometimes, frankly, with a willingness to break the old rules, breakthroughs that once seemed impossible can actually happen.
Yeah, what struck me was just how much the CFF acted like a savvy venture capital firm, using donor money, taking equity stakes, driving milestones. It's such a different way for a nonprofit to operate, but incredibly effective here.
It really was.
So the final provocative thought we want to leave you with builds on that ethical tension. Given that patient money directly subsidized the risk and helped bring this life-saving cure to market, how should we, as a society, balance the undeniable need for profit incentives to drive drug innovation against the moral imperative to ensure that everyone who needs a breakthrough therapy can actually access it?
And that's the multi-billion-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Something to definitely chew on.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.